to 88.3 Southern FM.
And this is going to be the space show with our special message.
I'm Apollo 16 astronaut Charlie Duke, the 10th man to walk on the moon. And you got a bunch of guys about to turn blue. This is the Space Show, Australia, on 88.3 Southern FM.
And last night, we were certainly turning blue. Would the Delta II launch team solve their problems in time to meet an orbital rendezvous and coincidentally put an Australian satellite in space? By now, you probably know they lost that race. Well, that topic dominates this evening's The Space Show. Hello, I'm Andrew Rennie. On Mission Control, we have Jay. Also, we have World Space News, and we try to understand some of Christopher Pyne's press releases. Well, as The Space Show goes to air this evening, an Australian satellite sits atop a Delta II rocket at Vandenberg Air Force Base. Now, Vandenberg sits between San Francisco and Los Angeles on Point Arguello. Overlooking the Pacific Ocean, Vandenberg is the second most used United States space launch site, second only to the legendary Cape Canaveral on Florida's Atlantic coast. The Australian satellite is called BRMM, the Buccaneer Risk Mitigation Mission. The tiny satellite is nestled up against the second stage fuel tank of the Delta II rocket. Above it, filling most of the volume of the Delta II's payload fairing, sits a much larger satellite, the first in a new series of weather satellites for the American National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. Called JPSS, J-P-S-S, the Joint Polar Satellite System. Once in orbit, it will be called NOAA 20. It is for JPSS-1 that the Delta II is sitting, fully fueled and ready to go at Vandenberg. The tiny Aussie satellite is merely a hitchhiker, as are several other small satellites. Last night, all of Australia watched and listened in great excitement and trepidation as an attempt was made to launch JPSS and Buccaneer. Did I say all of Australia? Well, perhaps not all. Perhaps not even most. Not even many. But the space show did with bated breath and our recorder running. So here, the drama of yesterday evening as we headed towards a planned 8:47 p.m. launch. At Vandenberg, this was to be 1:47 in the morning. Well, at 8:15 p.m., the NASA commentary began.
From Vandenberg Air Force Base in California, live coverage of the launch of NOAA's Joint Polar Satellite System 1, also known as JPSS-1, the first in the series of four highly sophisticated weather satellites. Hi, I'm Tori McClendon. Thanks for joining us. Today's launch of the United Launch Alliance Delta II is scheduled for 1:47 a.m. Pacific Standard Time with a 1 minute, 6 second window from Space Launch Complex 2. Let's go now to Mike Curie and Josh Finch inside Delta II Launch Control for more information on today's launch countdown. Mike and Josh, how's it going?
Great, Tori. Thank you very much. Yes, we are Delta Launch Control, and we are a little more than halfway through a planned 20-minute built-in hold at the T-minus 15-minute mark in today's countdown. We're set to resume the count at about 1:22 a.m. Pacific time. Fueling operations began on time more than an hour ago, and both stages are ready for this penultimate launch of the Delta II rocket. The launch vehicle is loaded with RP-1, a rocket-grade kerosene, and liquid oxygen. And as a note, NASA launch manager Omar Baez coordinated a new liftoff time of 1:47 a.m. and 35 seconds, the middle of today's 66-second launch window, and the countdown clocks will be adjusted to that time during the T-minus 4-minute hold.
There are no significant technical issues being worked at this time. The Delta II rocket and JPSS-1 spacecraft are healthy and ready for an on-time liftoff.
During a countdown to a rocket launch, there are several planned pauses to allow time to correct any problems. For the Delta II, these pauses occur at T-minus 15 minutes and T-minus 4 minutes, and last about 5 minutes.
We are now T-minus 15 minutes and counting. Let's go back to Mike and Josh and Delta Launch Control for an update. Mike and Josh?
Hi, Tori. We are here at the Remote Launch Control Center, and we're listening in as teams go through the necessary steps to lead to a liftoff of the Delta II rocket with the JPSS-1 spacecraft. We're at T-minus 5 minutes, 24 seconds, and counting. Now, we have a T-minus 4-minute hold coming up in just a few moments. That T-minus 4-minute hold is standard in the countdown for the Delta II rocket. This time allows managers and engineers to assess their systems and give a go-no-go status during a series of briefings.
Tension at Vandenberg and here in Australia at the Space Show built as we neared the end of the T-minus 4 hold. Fog was beginning to obscure the view of the rocket base. Before the countdown could resume, the launch director had to ask the team whether there were any problems. What we wanted to hear was go. What we did not want to hear was no go or hold, hold, hold. Even one bad call would result in a scrub. That is, no liftoff.
We're going to go back over to Mike and Josh in the control center for the final count to launch. Mike and Josh, how's it going over there?
Hi, Tori. Things continue to move along here in the Remote Launch Control Center. We continue to monitor the launch teams as they move toward the liftoff of the Delta II rocket with the JPSS spacecraft. We're still within the T-minus... the T count, 4-minute hold. So we're about 8 minutes, 40 seconds away from launch.
And there are a number of polls that are being conducted at this time. Members of the engineering and management teams are reviewing all of their data. The Western Range is evaluating the range for a go-no-go forecast. Upper-level winds, which had been a bit of a concern earlier on, have come into parameters at this time. Launch ground winds are within parameters. No weather issues at this time. No major technical issues are being worked. We'll be standing by for launch conductor Scott Barney to perform his final status check in about 1 minute. We're about 8 minutes away from launch.
One, all personnel and visitors remain in present position until launch. Maintain operational silence in the LCC.
That exceeds a launch constraint. Anytime after a terminal count status check, the observer shall announce hold, 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 channel one, identify their station, and briefly state the reason for the hold.
The Delta II rocket, lit by floodlights, was venting oxygen gas as the liquid oxygen oxidizer inside was being vaporized by the heat of the environment. The oxygen, being so cold, caused water vapor from the air to condense. Looking like smoke, this drifted away in the wind, merging with the gathering fog. In the next sequence, listen out for the term RC. This means range clearance. The Delta II rocket would head southwards across the Pacific Ocean to the west of Los Angeles. Shipping and aircraft have to keep out of this path. Any intruders will halt the launch.
Our T-zero time has been adjusted to 1:47 and 35 seconds a.m. Pacific Standard Time. We're about 7 minutes, 14 seconds away from liftoff. And we're standing by for the status check from launch conductor Scott Barney.
L-minus 7 minutes.
Status check. Proceed with terminal count. Report go, no go. Talker.
Go.
FSC. Go. Prop 1.
Go.
Prop 2.
Go.
PEA.
Go.
EEA. EEA, no one.
EEA, go.
BP.
Go.
SCM.
Go.
SYS.
Go.
FAC.
Go.
ATC-3.
Go.
Timer.
Go.
HYE.
Go.
FMA.
Go.
SSC.
Go.
SSP.
Go.
TM-1.
TM-1's a no-go at this time, looking into a red alarm on a BE. Our main engine yaw current.
Roger, no-go. TM-2.
Ready.
BE.
BE, ready.
ATC-2.
Go.
VSE.
VSEs, go.
OSM.
Go.
FACA.
Go.
GE.
Go.
RC. RC. RC, net 1.
RC.
Yeah, RC's on one. We are go pending a closure final analysis, nozzle closure final analysis from the range.
Roger, you're red at this time?
Red at this time until the slick determines go or not.
STM?
STM is go.
USO?
Go.
AC?
No go. Right. Pending the alarm evaluation.
Roger. Launch director, LC?
Yeah, repull me after we clear up these other items.
Roger, just to let you know, we are no-go at this time.
Understood.
And our hearts began to sink as we realized that this rocket was almost certainly not going to be launched because the JPS-1 satellite had to fit into an orbit to work with other satellites. And because of that, there was a window of only a minute when this launch could occur. It now looked, with two launch criteria not met, that the launch would not happen. In the launch control room, controllers were scrambling to fix the two problems, but only had seconds to do so.
Scheduled to come out of our hold in 45 seconds. However, we have some no-go conditions at this time. Waiting for the Western Range to clear an item. And an issue with the second stage SLU that manifested itself earlier in the count.
Verify manifold press is 160 to 185 PSIG.
Verified.
NSC reports spacecraft is configured for launch.
Spacecraft is configured for launch.
Roger.
LC, establish countdown limit conditions, T-minus 4 minute on.
On.
All personnel, stand by for release of the hold.
T-minus 4 minutes and counting.
Hold, hold. Hold, hold, hold.
And we've released the countdown clock. However, there has been a call to hold. We're counting down to the remaining launch window. There are 23 seconds remaining before we would be able to pick up the count and launch today. Managers in the Mission Director Center.
03-18. SSC performed T-minus 4 minute recycle.
And the launch window has expired for today. The countdown clock is holding at T-minus 3 minutes 40 seconds. Launch conductor has ordered the team to reconfigure back to the 4-minute mark. And we'll stand by for further details.
Disappointment. There would be no launch. A fully fueled rocket is like a bomb primed to detonate. You must have seen pictures of exploding rockets. A lot of checks have to be done to make a rocket safe before the fuel can be pumped back into storage tanks elsewhere on the launch site.
First stage external.
Second stage is external and safe. Scripts complete, safe and external.
Roger.
Just about the time that we were expected to come out of the hold at T-minus 4 minutes, there were a couple of positions that reported that they were no-go, and with the very short launch window that we had this morning, there was not enough time to completely work the issues and clear them. The rocket is in a safe condition. The spacecraft, JPSS-1, is in a safe condition. Managers in the Mission Director Center at the Remote Launch Control Center overseeing the recycle of the count.
FSC, can you verify first stage safe?
Yes, I can verify first stage.
SSC, second stage safe?
Safe.
And SSC verify SNAs are safe.
Safe.
We did not pick up T-minus 4 minutes and counting, and we did verify that all recycle steps are in the proper condition and recommend forward action.
Yes, sir. We need to set up for a 24-hour turnaround.
Roger that.
And as we heard, the preliminary plan is to set up for a 24-hour turnaround.
Initiate spacecraft transfer to external power and report complete.
Roger.
Prop 1, launch enable off.
Off.
SSP, launch enable off.
Off.
FAC, launch enable off.
Off.
ATC-3, launch enable off.
Off.
LC, establish T-minus 4 minute limits off.
Off.
Prop 2, establish PSD purge press closed.
Closed.
SYS, deactivate record on change list, launch sequence, and engine start.
Roger.
The NASA commentary finished with a chat with NASA's launch director, Omar Baez.
And we're back in the remote launch control center here at Vandenberg Air Force Base, and we're joined by NASA launch manager Omar Baez. And Omar, can you tell us a little bit about what happened during today's count?
Yeah, so, up until the last 4 minutes there, about the only thing we were working had to do with a couple of boats in the boat exclusion area off the coast here. Shortly as we're trying to come out of that hold, one of the parameters on the first stage went out of limits, and there was some discussion, short brief discussions, but with our short window, there wasn't enough time to be able to outbrief that parameter or that issue and come to resolution, and a hold was called just before we were supposed to go into the T-4 count. So we're setting up for a 24-hour recycle. Tomorrow's window will be we'll start 1 second later at 9:43:03 versus 02, which was today's start, and the same window, 66 seconds. So that's where we stand today.
Okay. And at this time, again, the vehicle is safe, the spacecraft is safe, everybody's just in the turnaround mode right now to recycle for tomorrow.
That's correct.
All right. Thank you for coming over and spending time with us, Omar.
Okay.
Now, the time that he gave there, I think, is incorrect. He said 9:43:03. That's universal time, of course. And that would put the launch this evening at 8:43 Australian Eastern Daylight Time. However, my understanding is the launch would be at 8:47 this evening. Now, we described the satellite JPSS-1 on last week's The Space Show. Well, here's another reminder of what the whole thing is all about.
Hi, I'm JPSS. I'm a high-tech weather satellite that orbits our planet. I do something called a polar orbit. I circle the Earth from North Pole to South Pole, over and over, while the Earth spins. While I do that, I get lots of information about what's going on around the globe. I watch storms, clouds, and rain. I take the temperature of the ocean, measure air quality, ozone health, and take pictures of the land and sea. This information is used for all kinds of things. It helps us take care of our coasts and oceans and all the amazing things that live there. It helps us monitor harmful weather events like floods and droughts and measure the health of the environment. Most importantly, it helps us predict weather 3 to 7 days in the future. That means I can be a big help ahead of storms, where future warnings are important. I send information to the National Weather Service. They use the information to create forecasts. The forecasts are shared with people all over the country to help prepare for weather emergencies. So you look to the sky and wave. I'll be flying by.
Please get your diary handy, because we have several entries for it coming up.
Southern FM. The sounds of the Bayside.
When a big volcano blew its top in Iceland, air traffic ground to a halt. NOAA's JPSS satellites will dramatically improve volcano monitoring worldwide, as well as be able to detect potential hotspots.
You're listening to The Space Show, which is presented by members of the Space Association of Australia.
Using a new ozone mapping instrument on the JPSS satellite, experts will be able to make better predictions to safeguard public health, as well as continue developing climate change models based on ozone observations.
The Space Show has a home on the internet. It is space.southernfm.com.au.
Hi, this is Mark Holden, and you're listening to 88.3 Southern FM.
Where this is The Space Show with Andrew and Jay. After many years of inactivity, the concept, nay, the reality of building satellites in Australia has suddenly taken off, if you will excuse the pun. We have already mentioned that one, the Buccaneer Risk Mitigation Mission, sits atop a Delta II rocket awaiting a launch at 8:47 this evening. What do the names M-cubed, MISO, QKD, RAAF, Obelisk and Viari mean to you? Well, before we discuss Buccaneer, let's look at some of these other satellite projects. Projects that the Federal Minister for Defence Industry, Christopher Pyne, has been keen to issue press releases about. For example, on September 29, he announced a research and development program in spaceborne sensor technologies. CSIRO has provided $2.7 million in seed funding to establish a high-altitude sensor systems program to be delivered through the Defence Materials Technology Centre. The aim is to build Australia's industrial capacity in sensor and onboard data processing technology for small satellites. Four projects have been selected from 36 applicants, all are from New South Wales. In another release on September the 29th, the Honourable Christopher Pyne, as I said, the Minister for Defence Industry, announced a three-year space research and development program between the University of New South Wales, Canberra, the Australian Defence Force Academy and the Royal Australian Air Force. The government intends to invest $9.6 million to support the growth of Australian space technologies. The money will also investigate and demonstrate ways to enhance defence space capability. Now, it is apparent from Pyne's statement that much of the investment will be aimed at enhancing the university's ability to deliver world-class space education to defence personnel. A total of three CubeSats, or miniature satellites, will be launched over the duration of the program. Minister Pyne said, and we quote, "The program would also help achieve a secure, resilient Australia by supporting the protection of our space systems from debris and anti-satellite weapons." End of quote. We found this last part of the ministerial statement incredible. That is not believable. And the Space Show asked him to justify the claim. On October the 3rd, I wrote to Mr. Pyne, and I quote, "Could you please provide further details to justify this claim, as it does not match an announcement by the Space Industry Association of Australia and in some newspapers?" Now, when, by October 28, the Space Show had not received any reply, the same request was sent to Mr. Pyne. This elicited the response from defence media. Quote, "We are working on a response and will be in touch as soon as possible." End of quote. On November 7, having been told of our pending November 8 program, defence media apologised for missing our deadline. Did I, they inquired, still require a response? And if so, what would be our absolute due date for response be? On the morning of last Wednesday, I replied that I was doing two programs, one that week and a second the following week. Less than half an hour later, defence media replied, quote, "Unfortunately, we would be unable to meet the deadline for this evening, but we'll endeavour to respond to your query before the next program," end of quote. Well, yesterday morning, a defence spokesperson sent me the following statement, which I will read in full. "The Defence University of New South Wales Canberra CubeSat Satellite Collaborative Research Program is an education initiative designed to enhance the University of New South Wales Canberra's ability to deliver world-class space education to defence personnel and inform the future direction of defence space capability. Defence interest in future space capability centres on space situational awareness, which is key to supporting the protection of our space systems from space debris and other threats to the space-based systems defence relies on to conduct operations. The sensor payloads that will be on board the three CubeSat satellites will be assessed for their ability to contribute to maritime surveillance, although this is not a specific objective. The CubeSat satellites will not be employed in an operational role. They are purely for research to inform capability decisions regarding the feasibility of satellites to perform maritime surveillance and space situational awareness roles. End of the defense spokesperson's statement. Now, what do they mean by space situational awareness? Well, that means being aware of other objects in space and whether or not a collision is likely. It's not exactly anti-satellite work. Meanwhile, at the University of New South Wales, Canberra, Professor Russell Boyce is leading a team developing a formation of CubeSats. The four satellites will be flown in low Earth orbit and accurately tracked. The four will deploy fundamentally different aerodynamic shapes. One might be an inflated sphere, another an unfilled square sail. Their relative motion will be measured accurately by onboard differential global positioning system receivers, as well as by ground tracking by the Falcon telescope network. The results will be compared with simulations by researchers at the university. Now, these satellites apparently do not yet have names, at least none that we've been able to find out. Now, let's move on to another program called MISO, M-I-S-O. Well, this is a mission to measure the vertical profile of methane in the upper atmosphere in order to better understand the atmospheric methane cycle. Instrumentation payloads developed by the University of New South Wales, Canberra and RAL Space in the UK will be aboard those satellites. And now moving on to another project called Beary Point. A satellite called Beary Point was launched on April 19 as part of the Cygnus OA-7 cargo craft to the International Space Station. The launch vehicle was an Atlas V rocket from Cape Canaveral. Three Australian QB50 satellites were also launched on the same rocket. Now, Beary Point is a three-unit CubeSat of mass 4 kilograms. Full military objectives have not been revealed, but it will provide targets for the space surveillance sensors. It was deployed from the International Space Station on May the 18th of this year and has an international designation of 1998-067-LT. Now, the University of New South Wales, Canberra says that Beary Point is a radio frequency signal collection mission that can be related to the spot beam mapping mission through mutual use of GPS signals. It's also known as SHARC, S-H-A-R-C, an acronym for Satellite for High Accuracy Radar Calibration. Now, Beary Point was developed in the United States, but part of the payload is a GPS receiver from the University of New South Wales, Sydney, and from the Defence Science and Technology Group. And it was deployed by the NanoRacks deployer from the space station into its own orbit. Now, Minister Christopher Pyne claimed Nauru GPS is successfully functioning correctly and providing significant research benefits. Following on from the Beary Point satellite will be three CubeSats collectively known as Beary Squad. Now, Beary is B-I-A-R-R-I, and squad is in squadron. Now, Beary will explore CubeSat formation flying and aims to better understand the drag and lift forces experienced by the CubeSats. Electro-optic systems will be used for laser ranging to test the accuracy of the Nauru GPS receiver. University of New South Wales, Sydney delivered four flight models of the Nauru GPS receivers to the Defence Science and Technology Group in late 2013. They were integrated into the CubeSats by the United States Air Force Research Laboratories in 2014 and early 2015. Initially, the Biari satellites were to be launched in late 2015 or early 2016. After delays, the mission was split. Part one of the split was a risk mitigation mission called Biari Point, with one satellite which was actually launched in 2017, as we've mentioned. The second part of the mission, Biari Squad, with three satellites. And this is going to be launched at some later date, and by that they mean late in 2017 or sometime in 2018. How will they maintain their formation? Well, they'll use micro thrusters to keep in position and also to change formation. The University of New South Wales, Canberra, has announced that Biari will use signals from the Global Positioning System satellites. Biari would broadcast phase-coherent and frequency-shifted L1-band signals to the Australian Square Kilometre Array Pathfinder of the array of radio telescopes, which are located in Western Australia. Now, last week, Douglas Griffin, who was on our show last week, advised the Space Show that the University of New South Wales has a minor role in Biari. He said that the University of New South Wales is conducting experiments on astrodynamics. What, you might ask, is astrodynamics? Well, this is the propagation of the orbit under the influence of tiny residual forces from the atmosphere in the near-Earth environment. And we thank Douglas for that information. In a scientific paper delivered in 2013 to the International Global Navigation Satellite Systems Society, a group of researchers from the University of New South Wales described a global positioning system receiver developed in Australia for the Biari satellite. As we mentioned, Biari is a CubeSat being developed for the Defence Science and Technology Organisation and overseas partners. The satellite will operate in low Earth orbit at an altitude of approximately 600 kilometres. The receivers are manufactured in New Zealand by General Dynamics Corporation. Although it is not widely known, Australia has a heritage in the supply of global positioning receivers for the space industry going back to 2004. These receivers have been successfully demonstrated in several major space missions. Project Biari is a multilateral defence-related project involving the launch of three Boeing Colony 2 CubeSats in a string of pearls formation. The United States is providing the spacecraft, integration and launch. Canada, the United Kingdom and Australia are also contributing to the mission. As noted, the Australian contribution is the GPS receivers for each satellite. The receivers are required to report the position of the satellite to within 10 metres. Another requirement is to measure the separation between the satellites to within 10 centimetres. Yes, you heard right, 10 centimetres. A third requirement is to give time signals to an accuracy of 20 nanoseconds. That is 20 billionths of a second. The Biari satellites will be fitted with corner reflectors, allowing the craft to be tracked using laser ranging. Electro-optic systems in Canberra could be involved in this task. For the Biari satellites, the university had to redesign the receiver as previous versions of Nauru used too much power for a CubeSat mission. Part of this redesign involved writing new software computer code, and this can be reloaded by remote control if needed. Well, as we head out towards the end of the space show, we've just got time to mention a couple more Australian-based satellites. RIIF M1 and RIIF M2. Well, these are scheduled for launch in 2018 and 2019, respectively. They are missions led by the University of New South Wales in Canberra, and not much has been publicly said about these two satellites or their objectives. Now, RIAF, I don't know whether that means the Royal Australian Air Force or not, but Yeah, so watch out for those satellites being made here in Australia. And M-cubed. Well, it's a one-unit CubeSat from the University of New South Wales, Canberra, that has observed, that the university has observed with a telescope. The University of New South Wales has no involvement in the design or operation of the spacecraft itself. The University of New South Wales has observed M-cubed in order to advance their astrodynamics research, and those observations were made last year. So this American satellite, M-cubed, is in an orbit of perigee 434 kilometres and apogee 695 kilometres, inclined at 101.7 degrees to the equator. And now we go to the Buccaneer mission. The Buccaneer risk mitigation mission sits on the launch pad right now as we speak, and hopefully it's going to prove the technology. And then we'll follow BMM, the Buccaneer main mission, or just simply called Buccaneer. And I'm told by Douglas Griffin that the launch date has not been finalized and depends on the flight characteristics of the Buccaneer risk mitigation mission. But at the moment, the best guess is around 12 to 18 months after the launch of BRMM. As I said, that advice from Doug Griffin of the Australian Defence Force Academy in Canberra. Well, we're out of time here. Don't forget that launch coming up tonight. But this is The Space Show. I'm Andrew Rennie. A big, big thank you to Jay, who's been on Mission Control. And we're going to be handing over to Purple Haze.